Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
I'm Sam Edwards. I'm third generation Cure Master from S. Wallace Edwards & Sons in Surrey, Virginia. We support the Heritage Radio Network because we believe in the cause and what they're doing. They're supporting family-raised livestock, small family farms, certified humane, pasture-raised, antibiotic-free. Basically, we take the products from Heritage Foods USA and make them into Serrano-style hams, prosciutto-style hams, bacon, sausage, like my grandfather did. You can find us at SurreyFarms.com or VirginiaTraditions.com.
We talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Hot sauce and barbecue sauce and fat drippings all over my hands, which means...
You got the show today, because I'm already just going to go take a nap. The barbecue and meat comb we're referring to was provided by Dinosaur Barbecue today, because we have John Stage in the house. John, welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you for... that's the best intro ever. It's just like, oh, let me just roll up with a tin of meat, and as Darren still picks...
No one, dude, right? No one can see us. That's the best part. It's like no the burnt, caramelized piece.
That's it. It's where fat, smoke, and spice all come together right there.
John, why don't you give our listeners a little bit of background on Dinosaur Barbecue?
Dinosaur Barbecue was actually started around 1983 as a mobile concession business. We got into the business of doing all the biker events up and down the East Coast. And once I started crossing the Mason-Dixon line, I realized what I was doing and calling myself barbecue was not actually barbecue. We were doing sausage, peppers, and onions, steak sandwiches.
Oh, like the street Italian fare type of stuff.
Yeah, but this was, 1983, 1984. So when I say, I didn't know what the hell barbecue was.
What was the barbecue scene like there? Because barbecue had was existing at that time.
Yeah, but south of the Mason-Dixon line, it really...
There was nothing in the north?
There was nothing up north. So, you know, my definition of barbecue at that time was, cooking some sausage, peppers, and onions or a steak sandwich. And that's how this business started. And then as I started going, the bike events and the fair business, kind of it dries up after September, so you'd go down south. And that's when I realized, holy shit, I'm not doing real barbecue. So I just kind of hit all the, Memphis was my Shangri-La back then. Right. I always wanted to, Memphis, I had this image like, just a barbecue mecca. So I went to Memphis and got on the bike and just rode all over the south and got a little taste of what the real deal was.
Did you get, were you able to get any like tips or training or secrets? Or did you just eat and kind of, I feel like it's so closely guarded.
No, you know what? It is, but it isn't. There's the barbecue community when, you ask people about barbecue, most times they're not going to give you their secret sauce or what their rib recipe is, but they're going to give you the, and especially a guy coming from the north. Now, people were very good to me. There was a lot of generosity.
When's the first time you heard about Slow and Low?
When I was told that what I was serving was not barbecue.
who told you? Who, like?
Some guy at the, I was in Hagerstown, Maryland.
Did you roll up thinking you're like, here we go?
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah. It was, because, the biker events that we did, we were very well known on the biker circuit. But once we started hitting the fairgrounds and going down south, no one knew who the hell we were. Yeah. So this guy looked at me and said, I don't know what you're doing here, son, but this ain't barbecue. I was like, what are you talking about? He goes, no, man, it's about low and slow, building fires. And that's what kind of like stoked me. And this is about 1985 now. And that's when I was like, wow, I got to learn what the hell this is all about. So that was actually the first time I heard that term.
What was that night like? Did you go home and you're like, your whole world's upside down?
I think we got drunk as hell at these fairs. Because it was kind of like you set up your fair, you drink yourself to sleep, and then get up and do it again the next day. So no, we knew that, the season was ending. And then at that point, we decided we got to retool everything.
Right. And what year is this?
About 85, I'd say.
So you retool it, and you get tired of the road, and then about like late 80s, you're like, I'm done. I want to open something. Yeah. And you open your first place.
Yeah, we opened up in Syracuse.
Are you from there?
I'm from New York originally, but my family, when we were 13 years old, moved up to Syracuse. And that's where I kind of landed.
Were there any like barbecue places, like southern barbecue places up there?
No.
How was the reception or...
You know what, first, the first restaurant in Syracuse made people nervous because there was always bikes out front, and it was like a biker-owned place, and then it started catching on a little bit at a time, and then once we started serving beer, then everything popped a little bit. But if you go back to the 80s, the biker world wasn't like it is now. It was much more hardcore back then. And if you had bikes in front of your place back then, it made certain people not want to go.
How did you have bikes in front of your place with no beer?
I couldn't get a liquor license at that time.
Were you a biker? Did you used to bike?
Well, I still ride, yeah.
What do you ride?
I got a 57 Panhead, I got a 74 Shovel, and I got a 08 Softail Deluxe.
I'm glad that I asked because I have no idea what you do. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, well, yeah. A 1957, no, 1974, no. And a 1908 Harley Davidson.
My knowledge of motorcycle stops at two wheels.
Oh. Okay, yeah, there you go.
We try to learn a little something every day on the show as well. Okay. So you expanded there to Syracuse. And
now how long till the college kids caught on?
College kids, man, hard to say. I'm going to say probably after a couple of years, because everyone kind of caught on after a couple of years. But that first 2 years in business, I could have closed the door 100 times. And
no one would have.
No one would have.
They're like, oh, I never made it to that place. Now, you have a real smoker up there?
Yes, we did. We put a real smoker in around 1980. Let's say I opened up in 88, and that's when we got our first smoker.
And before, you just had the mobile rig, right?
Yeah.
All right. So 88, you're in Syracuse, and then it was like 10 years before you got a second location, right?
88, 98, yeah. Yeah, it was. 98, I started bottling my barbecue sauce in Rochester, and I kept going by this beautiful old train station that was abandoned.
Which we've been to.
That's right. You said you've been in that.
Remember?
So,
oh, yeah. Yes.
Tour. So that was a 1905 train station that was completely abandoned, and I just fell in love with the architecture of the building.
It's amazing.
And I decided to open up a second one, which wasn't the best business plan because it was like... The architecture kind of inspired me to do it, but I had no, I had no idea how to open up a second one 90 miles away. So that was a, school of hard knocks as
and then,
usual.
What's that? Like, that's like a, hour plus drive?
It's an hour and a half, but it still doubles, automatically you've doubled the size of your restaurant, your company.
Right.
And if you don't have the infrastructure in place to do it right, so I was.
So building that infrastructure and like, cause we're talking about before we got on air, but you had to get out of the pit. How do you pass the quality control for something that's so specific? Like, I always feel like barbecue, it's like, it's gotta be.
It's usually like one guy.
Yeah. And it's like his recipe that he's perfected. So how do you pass that over and, with the confidence that, or how do you find the guys that are like, not going to be like, well, I think this should have a little bit more paprika, so I'm throwing that in.
Well, I'm open to all ideas. if somebody wants to change something, they really have got to present it to me of like why this is going to be better. Other than that, you don't mess with the barbecue. And plus, I give everybody a little piece of the action to be vested in what we do. Because I could not grow what I do if I didn't have people that... It's really the people.
No, I think it's growing any empire or business. You have to have the people who have ownership. If they feel that they're just working for you, at some point, even the most dedicated person just goes, like, I'm never going to see more than my paycheck.
Exactly.
I hate to put it so bluntly, but that's...
No, you got to give people you got to share a little bit because you want people to care like you care.
Yeah.
And that's really what barbecue is all about. It's like really caring about, the nurturing process of cooking this meat for 12 hours. It goes in rough and tough. 12 hours later, you've lost 50% of the yield, but now it falls off the bone. It's tender. But it takes a process and it's a craft to get it that way. And they got to believe in it. They got to completely believe.
What's a... I guess the question is, have you ever had a failed batch of barbecue?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have.
What is that? What happens? Because a lot of times the beautiful thing about slow roasting meat is like, do your dry rubber marinade, whatever have you, throw it in, make sure the fire's hot, see you in 12 hours.
No. I wish it was... If it was that easy, everybody would do it. It ain't that easy. Probably the times we've lost... it's called combustion. When you put on wood too quick and too much air gets in and then all this black soot. So we've lost a couple loads in my career that way. And there's nothing you can do about it. They're done. And that's when you say no brisket today or no pork today. Or you've had fires in the pits. Yeah, that's usually. But if something comes out and it's still a little tight, it can always go back in.
Right.
If it's overcooked, it's dog food.
Does that happen? Has that happened to you any time in the last 5 years, 10 years?
Of what I just... combustion? Oh, yeah, it has.
Just nature. So can we go back real quick to what it's like from a mental state of, you have the success in Syracuse, and then you start bottling the sauce, which is usually, have we found, the first way that like businesses really start growing is when you can be like having product sell for you where you don't need to be there.
Right.
The whole branding of that. What is that mindset? Like, what did you go through as you were building Rochester and then eventually leading to Harlem?
Well, what I learned is I've always been kind of a control freak.
And
I've always had to. So what I tried to do is do everything myself. And then I was just running myself ragged, ragged. So it really made me, regroup and think about, man, how do I, it's great that I can cook this, but boy, what if I can teach somebody to do that and keep them motivated? I think that's where the magic is.
Right.
When you can get somebody who can cook that as good as you, that's more of an accomplishment, I think, than you just having to do it yourself all the time and pushing people away. Because you can't grow at that point.
No, you can't. Especially if you have the vision. Some people are just really great at the task and then teaching. But, if you have this whole vision of like a brand. But
we're going to play a song, but one question.
We are?
Yeah, so I know that it sounded like, you know, you had your two partners. Mm-hmm. How did you come up with a recipe or a flavors that you were okay with? Sometimes it seems like this stuff is like one person's vision and then mm-hmm. it goes out. Or were you more like the taste and they were the business, or how did that work?
Well, it was, you know, these are all my recipes. The sauce is my recipe. I've always had the culinary arm of things. My two original partners, you know, they've since went their separate ways. So
the way of the dinosaur,
yeah, kind of
got in
its own way.
Thank you.
So you know, to develop a taste like that, barbecue sauce changed 100 times by the time I actually put it into the bottle,
right?
Because it was always like, you know, tweak, retweak, and I'm always tweaking.
But now, is it now a set flavor?
Yeah. Yeah. The sauce, once it goes in the bottle,
right?
It's pretty much it.
All right, so we're gonna take a break, and we're gonna come back. We're gonna talk about coming to New York, coming to Harlem, and urban barbecue, and what's happened there.
Temples that I built for you, and I sang songs of praise and love. And up, I sang songs of burying you alive. And up, see, I had to tear it down.
So we have John Stage from Dinosaur Barbecue in here, and now we've gone.
I'm still picking, by the way.
I know you are.
Don't make it seem like it's just me.
I mean, I don't know what you're talking about.
I know. So you pick every day.
I pick every day.
Every day.
Yeah.
What's your favorite thing to pick at?
Well, the pork shoulder is going to get picked at. The brisket's going to get a slice. There's going to be a chicken wing that disappears. And
oh, your chicken wings are awesome.
Yeah, they're good.
You know what? For a lot of people don't get to experience barbecued chicken most wings. Mm-hmm. You know, most of the time it's just like fried.
Right.
How did you come up with your wings?
Because I love chicken wings, but if
okay,
I
go on,
if I eat fried wings, I feel terrible after I eat them. So,
well, you feel sort of good.
Well, good going in, but
20 minutes later, you got that hate the world coma.
Well, the grease kind of kills me, you know, the deep frying. Yeah. So I just wanted to do a little different version of it. So we put them in a barbecue pit. This is years ago. Threw them on a grill, and it was love ever since.
Yeah, that blue cheese dressing sauce, just it's awesome.
Yeah, it's nice.
So we got up to 98. You're in Rochester.
Yeah.
You're only 90 miles apart from home base. Mm-hmm. Then you start. When you start looking to New York, when you start looking to, and why do you start looking to Harlem? Because 2004 Harlem is not the Harlem it was today.
No, it's a little different. A little different. Well, my son went to college and he left the house. This is he went to the Culinary Institute. Mm-hmm. So he leaves around 2001, and I wanted to come back to New York at that point. Yeah. I knew it. Me and my girlfriend at the time, and any free moment we got, we'd come down to the city, and. I ended up getting an apartment down here, and I said, you know, I'm gonna base myself here, start taking a look around.
Uh-huh.
And my family's all from Washington Heights originally.
Okay.
So it just, you know, I looked all over Manhattan, and nothing felt like barbecue to me. And it really didn't. You know, I was like, it's just too tight, too closed in, too high to buildings. Right. And then I would leave upstate, or leave to go back from New York upstate, and I'd always get on 125th Street and get on the on and off ramp there. I was like, wow, I love this neighborhood. It just feels like barbecue. And I had originally had a lease in Brooklyn over on Fifth Avenue and Union. And then I had something I was looking at in Williamsburg back then. And then I ended up finding this one here in Harlem. I was like, man, this is it right here.
It's a beautiful spot.
I knew it the second I was there, I knew
packed.
It.
I've never been there when it wasn't packed.
Yeah, it's popping, man.
It does well.
Yeah.
Was it like instantly received?
You know, it was. We opened up pretty strong out of the gate.
So, I mean, 2004, were you guys the first big barbecue place to open in the city?
No, Blue Smoke opened up
about
4 months before we
did. But Blue Smoke is, I mean, it's different because when I think of Blue Smoke, I think of a little bit more high-end.
Yeah, yeah.
Not that you're doing, but like, you know, the whole empire is sort of like.
Yeah, yeah, they do a nice job.
They do a nice job. Now, do you guys have an actual smoker in Harlem?
Yeah, we got four of them.
How do you guys, I thought there was a city ordinance where you couldn't.
No.
What is that? What is that myth?
Okay, the myth is really, and then again, it's
more red tape than this, right?
It's if somebody, all right, say let's just say a Blue Smoke, for example. There's $1 million condos, $2 million condos around it. If they're smelling your smoke and they start complaining, now you got a problem. Where I'm at, somebody in Jersey may smell it, you know, across the river. You can smell it, you know, when I come over the bridge, over to Riverside Bridge, I can smell it when I'm on my motorcycle.
And then they just get off the exit and go right to the rest
of the room. Yeah, so it's really who's complaining and, you know, what you do with your smoke. And then there's scrubbers you can put on it. There's ways around everything. But being in the interior of Manhattan is much more difficult than, let's say, if Roberta's put a barbecue pit out.
Yeah, I mean, they've got the open oven over there in the summer, and like no one, there's no one around to complain
exactly
about it.
And that's why, you know, when I was in that neighborhood originally, it was all meatpacking guys, auto body shops, so there was nobody complaining,
right,
you know, around it. So,
and then you were already there,
right,
when
exactly.
they came in,
yeah.
And
so the neighborhood, yeah, in 2003, you know, it was a lot of homeless, a lot of crackheads, a lot of just craziness, and then you know, it all just started changing around a little bit.
So, you know, now you're in Newark, and now next year you're going to be expanding to other states.
Yeah, we're going to Newark.
To Newark. How did you pick Newark?
You know, I catered for the mayor about 3-4 years ago, Cory Booker, and they reached out and said, wow, we really like what you did in Harlem. Would you like to come to Newark? And then I went out there and I looked around and I wasn't ready and I just wasn't feeling it yet. You know, it was still Newark's, you know, it was real raw back then. This is before the Prudential Center was built. And then every year I just went out there because I like going over to the Ironbound and hitting some of the Portuguese joints out there.
Oh, yeah.
That's good stuff out there. And then this past time, again, so often I fall in love with a building. And it's this old chandelier factory. And it's right next to the Prudential Center.
Oh.
And it's got original mosaic tile floors, brick walls. tin ceilings from the 1800s, all that were covered up, you know, by really crummy tile and drop ceilings.
Right.
It's absolutely beautiful. And I like the energy in Newark, what's happening over there.
That's great. Let me go back a little bit. So you came here 2004, and now barbecue has sort of taken over New York City in a certain way, you know, with like Hill Country, Fat Sow, the sure. Big Apple Barbecue. Mm-hmm. Is it a tight community? Is it a sort of like everyone's doing their own thing type of community? You know, since you guys were and arguably one of the first.
And how's it compared to like the South when you went down there in the 80s?
You know, I think New York's got some great barbecue, number one. I think, you know, between Fat Sow and all the other people out there. So it's a community that when we get together, it's a lot of fun. But everyone does their own thing. No one barbecue place has copied anybody in New York, which
that's
is great.
True.
Everybody does their own thing. And there's some really good stuff out there. So I think we all respect what we do with each other. And when we do happen to get together, we have a lot, you know, we have a few drinks.
Just a few?
A few more than a few sometimes. And it's actually a lot of fun. So, no, there's some really good people in the barbecue world here.
What's your favorite drink with barbecue?
You know, my first go-to is beer.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
What type of beer?
You know, I got 24 on tap, so I'm always tasting them, but I've been really liking the 6 points, anything by 6 point right now. I like the 6 point crisp.
Yeah,
with
just
barbecue.
Had that this weekend.
It's really good.
It's really good.
I like the Blue Point toasted lagers, great with it.
I mean, I had three yesterday. It was Sunday fun day.
Oh, dude, they're good.
They're good. Good.
And we just came out with a smoked porter, which, believe it or not, it's not as heavy as you
think. Wait, you make beers?
No, I got a guy in Syracuse. Okay. Middle-aged brewery makes it, and he smoked the hops and smoked nice. Everything. And that goes really good. And it's a lot lighter. It surprised me. It's a lot lighter than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. And Turkey Day coming up.
Oh, yeah.
Doing a lot of turkey. You said 50?
We're at about 42 right now. So
are they all spoken for, or do people just come in?
No, right now they got to be spoken for.
Okay.
So we're hitting our capacity right now.
That's so awesome just to be like, okay, you know, I'm not going to cook a turkey. I'm just going to order one up.
Yeah, it makes it a little bit easier.
Do you do catering out of all of your locations? Or
oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah, we do a lot of catering.
So
yeah.
Imagine it's a busy time for you guys coming up between now and the holiday season.
The holidays, we're putting a catering facility upstairs. And I was trying to get it open for the holidays, but I just got overwhelmed, and it's going to have to be afterwards. But we do a lot of... So I'm looking to get the catering under the roof, but now we're going, you know, it goes out there.
Awesome. Well, John, thank you so much.
Guys, thanks for having me.
DinosaurBarbecue.com is the website. We are going to... We're making a dent.
making a dent. I'm done. And DinoBBQNYC is the Twitter. Anything else that people should hit up for to find you? Find all your barbecue sauce?
You got the cookbook, right?
Yeah, that cookbook came out in 2001. Yeah.
So it's everything.
So you got to do for another one?
I don't know, man. I got to have something new to say. How many times can I say low and slow again? You know, and do
all the barbecue
recipes?
Well, slow and low.
Yeah, maybe I put it backwards.
Maybe put it backwards. I have faith that you guys will come up with new recipes and new stuff. But, you know, this is, I mean, that's the thing about barbecue. It's like you come back to the same place year in, year out. And it's just like the best stuff.
There you go.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Right. We're going to play a couple songs. What I got?
I don't know, but we got Liam, you like digested things a little bit.
I'm feeling very relaxed.
Yeah, it's pretty mellow. Maybe open up a nice bottle of red and just turn the lights down. But we're going to get some...
We got some tracks. Thank you.
I just want to give a quick shout out before we get into Liam. I went to this place last night called Norman's Kill.
Oh, right next to Key Foods. Did you go see Sam last night?
I did. And it was it's a whiskey grilled cheese bar, and that's it. Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. I got like a little emotional about it because it was so perfect and everything. I don't know, Liam, if you drink a lot of whiskey or bourbon.
I am a whiskey fan. Yes.
Yeah.
And do you suffer from cheese dreams?
What's cheese dreams?
Well, when you eat a lot of cheese, you have really intense dreams quite often.
It's actually really weird you say it because I really don't really have dreams. And last night I had really fucked up crazy
cheese dreams.
Cheese dreams.
Yeah.
Medical affliction. Well, Liam, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I was saying before, you were first brought to my attention 5 years ago by a coworker who was trying to figure out how to bring you over from your home of New Zealand.
All I had to do was wait for him to move here.
All I had to do was wait five years. And welcome to New York.
Thank you.
How long have you been here?
Well, we kind of moved over here at the beginning of the year, March, April, but I was on tour all year, so I can't really say I lived here until about 2 months ago.
And do you have barbecue like this down in New Zealand?
No, we've got a very different style of barbecue, which is kind of beach, summertime, grill kind of barbecue stuff.
It's still barbecue in my mind.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. We don't do the slow kind of pulled pork, and we don't use barbecue sauce that much. And yeah.
Oh my God, I'm so full. Thank you for putting away the pork.
Yeah, we needed a break. So you put a record out this year. It's called FOMO.
Yes.
On Yap Rock. Is it fear of missing out? Is that what it stands for?
It is. Yeah.
Because I have suffered from that for many a year.
Have suffered or continue to suffer?
I'm in treatment. I'm getting better.
I'd say anyone that says they don't suffer from FOMO is a liar.
I have repeatedly told people that I will be like 75, talk to my grandkids, be like, how was the party last night? Did Grandpa miss out?
Yeah.
Who played? Was Sheena there? You know?
Exactly.
Like, it's born inside of you.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to know that it's an international affliction.
Well, it's only getting amplified these days with the amount of, you know, social networking letting us know what's going on all the time and what you're missing out on and people boasting about what they're doing.
Are you better, better not to have known about the party that you didn't go to last night?
I think it's better not to know. Yeah.
I kind of think ignorance is bliss. I kind of think that I take the opposite way. Like, I can take a look at something I wasn't at, and I was like, that looked awful. I'm so glad I didn't go.
Boo.
I'm just saying.
I've seen you morning after has been like, should I have gone?
I've gotten so much. It's gotten better.
What's your level of FOMO at on a 1 to 10?
At the moment, I'm actually feeling no FOMO. Even though I just...
Wait, did you just say... Well, I'm obviously lying.
Please go back
30 seconds on the podcast.
Yeah, there's that little 30 loop thing.
No, but I guess what I'm not saying I don't suffer from it, but at this present moment, because I'm just sort of settling into being in New York and I'm having a really good time. I had a good weekend. I've got a good week coming up. I'm on Snacky Tunes, you know? I'm not missing out on anything.
Yeah.
Right.
FOMO is the obvious cure for Snacky Tunes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so you're actively in it, so you're not missing out.
Exactly. That's why I moved to New York.
But let's go back to, when was the last time you really had a big case of FOMO?
I suppose there's different types of FOMO, isn't there? There's ones where you're like missing out on like your mother's birthday and all your family are there and you talk to them and you get that little ache of, I wish I was there.
Like real FOMO.
Yeah. And then there's ones that are like, didn't go to the party, or your friends on Facebook post a photo of all hanging out and you're not there and they tag you anyway just to rub it in your nose.
Oh, that's like, wow, that's like forced FOMO.
Yeah. We're cruel people down in New Zealand. Yeah.
I didn't even know about that. Man, that's something. Why don't we get a song?
Okay.
Are you going to be playing mostly stuff off the new record?
I'll play. It's kind of hard because we opened with that track that is on the new record, and I forgot that I sent that to you, and I was going to play that one.
No, you can still play it.
I might do a couple of old ones as well, just because it works good with this little tiny amp setup I've got.
I promise. You can play whatever you want.
But this one I'll do is off FOMO, and it's called Cold Feet. Saw you in the street. It left me in a state of wondering if you even noticed me, acting like a nervous teen. I got you on demand, like a dream to have you on my own. And even if you wanted to,
I just wanna have a drink or two.
That was awesome. Thank you.
Awesome.
The hushed voice of a
singer. Can I tell you something? I want a sweater or a suit that invokes the style of the Vox amp. You know what I mean? Like, every time I see it, I'm like, that would just...
It's someone could a type of tweed kind of thing. Like.
There's just something about it where I'm just like, if you could just somehow turn that into clothing.
The aesthetic.
The aesthetic.
That's a good thought. I think you're onto something.
Yeah. What was the name of that song?
That's called Cold Feet.
Don't have cold feet about that idea.
No.
No, not at all.
But you might at some point.
Yeah. So maybe I want to act on it now. So being a New Zealander, how did you grow as an artist to be able to, you know, gain fans stateside and internet being what it is, you know, I know that helped to some point, but was it just like life on the road or how did you, you know, start to get outside of your country's borders?
Well, I think it's a pretty natural thing for New Zealanders to kind of leave the country. We're like the highest traveler per capita of all nations, apparently.
Is it like Australians where they just go on around, like go away for 2 years?
Yeah, kind of. I think, you know, we'd like to think we're a bit more focused about it, not just there to drink. But to be honest, I moved to London about 6-7 years ago and most New Zealanders I met were just getting drunk.
Right.
But I went there with my band and it was kind of the, I guess Australia was, we moved to Australia first as a sort of stepping stone to get out of the country and try and get, you know, have a career. And then it was obvious that Australia was just another place that you set up and don't get noticed anywhere else in the world.
Right.
So we moved to England because that's the logical step. And London was great, but it was also, it, to be honest, that was kind of the main sort of factor in what turned me into a solo artist and created the record that it ended up sort of getting me noticed overseas. So I guess it was
Was there tensions in London?
Yeah, well, I guess it was a combination of band breaking up and a relationship breaking up and all those classic things that inspire creativity, you know, heartache.
And those down cold London
4 p.m. dark, cold,
exactly,
rainy London.
Yeah.
Were you there during the winter?
Yeah.
Well, that'll do it.
And it was depressing and terrible, and it meant going home was always really great, and I went home and made my first solo record with...
In London?
Yeah, I wrote it all in London, but I went back to New Zealand and recorded it, and it kind of had... I stopped doing stuff with my band, so it was kind of completely for me. I wasn't really even planning on... I didn't know who was going to release it, if anyone was going to like it. I did it all myself, engineered it and produced it myself and mixed it myself and just played everything myself. And all of a sudden, this label in the States kind of got interested in my old band about the same time as I'd finished this record. So I started talking to them and things just kind of fell into place.
What did you eat when you were in London?
What did I eat? Crap. It was terrible food. Not literal crap, but just,
obviously.
No, but I did actually get to invent my signature dish, which is a chili bacon pasta.
Go on.
And that is, and it doesn't taste the same. Like, in each country has its own way of it tasting, but and London was the original one, so I have to argue that that is the best chili bacon.
How did that come about?
It was just something that because we had other friends, other musicians that were living there as well, and we were all pretty poor, so we would just pull our, you know, small amounts of money together, and I would cook up huge batches of this chili bacon pasta, and no matter how much I made, and I would make a shitload of it, it would always get completely eaten. It was almost like a drug. It was like something you keep picking at, like this barbecue. And
just, there's a rundown house like Train Spotting, and it's just on the table.
Yeah, that's more of a, you know, like, it's more wild than it maybe was, but I'll go with that. I think that's more romantic.
So what brought you to New York?
I guess I've done a lot here in the last few years. I've done a lot of touring here, and I guess in some ways I've based my career out of the States, even though I haven't really lived anywhere for a few years because I was touring so much that it just made sense because it costs so much to live in New Zealand and fly here. You know, if you've got a band and stuff, there's $20,000 down in tickets straight off the bat, right, to do a tour. So it made sense just to base myself here, and I think it's really nice to immerse yourself in a place where there is a lot of competition and there's a lot of amazing stuff being made. So not only is it inspiring, but it's also a really big challenge and a good way to kick yourself up the ass to do something great rather than just good.
And it's easier to get in front of a lot more new fans. It's not just like a one, like, I hope they come to my New York show.
Yeah.
And you have a residency coming up, right?
Yeah, in January at the Rock Shop.
Where is that?
I think it's sort of, it's almost Park Slope. It's sort of South Brooklyn. I don't know if it's quite in Park Slope. I should know this because I'm telling people to come to it, but
it's January. You got time.
A lot of people that I've met that know the Rock Shop have a big love for it and say it's a great sounding room. And
we let people do a lot of prep. Like, we ask all the early questions on the show, and then like you can go home and research the ideas.
Yeah.
And all that stuff. Well, also, no one's making plans past Thanksgiving.
No,
and definitely not past Christmas.
And I kind of wanted it like a, we had a choice of a Monday or a Wednesday night, and I thought Monday is the perfect night of the week because you don't really, New York doesn't really exist on the whole like Monday's dead and Friday's party. It's right. Like, but less people have plans on a Monday, so it feels like in the wintertime, it's going to be a good way to keep warm. Come to my residency on Monday.
I think a Monday residency, one of our favorite bands, Pela, who now we're Augustines.
All right. They were like toured with Pela.
Oh, you did?
Well, I was supposed to. We did two shows with them, and the singer fell off the stage and cut a tendon in his hand, and they canceled the rest of the tour.
Billy.
Yep. Yeah.
Now they're back as a new band called We're Augustines, which are great.
Right.
They were on a few weeks ago.
Did you continue on that tour, or was the whole tour canceled?
We did, but we continued it on. But like, I was my first American tour, and I came over here, and we did the first New York show. It was great, sold out. Did the second show, packed as in Chicago, and then he fell off the stage. He got like stage invaders, you know, everyone's dancing, and that's when he cut his hand. So we went to Minneapolis and played the show to a bunch of people who were a bit confused that they weren't seeing Pela, but I think we did a good job anyway. You know, we've got a good, me and EJ, when we used to perform, we were very good at playing in front of a room of people that had no clue what to expect.
What's like the first trick, like, to get them on your side?
It's pretty much just throttling them by the neck and blasting them with fuzz and me smashing the drums as hard as I can.
That's right. Why don't we hear another song?
Sure. It's the kind of the antithesis to what we do in a live setting, but hey, I can't bring all the drums in.
No, this
next
is,
time.
Yeah, next time. We'll get a bigger shaping container.
are here with you.
Yeah. Right here. Who's that? Is that song written from a cold, lonely London night?
It is actually written about you guys.
Oh. Huh. That just got real awkward. I'm sorry we weren't there in the past.
I know. That was when I was in London and you guys were here just starting Snacky Tunes.
Probably. So what are your plans for your time in New York? New record? Tours?
Yeah. I guess outside of just immersing myself in the culture, your fine culture.
Wait, hold on a second. Pause. What do you, because I'd love to ask you this in a year from now, what do you perceive as our fine culture? What are the things that you'd like to get immersed in?
Football and...
Oh, come on now.
Yeah. No, I think it's just, this is a big place and America's been through a lot in the last 10 years, that's for sure, especially from an outside perspective. When I grew up, America was the utopia, and now it's showing it's both sides, really, it's cracks and stuff, and I find that really enthralling, really. I think that it's, with all the Occupy Wall Street stuff that's going on and as much as it sometimes feels quite helpless, I also feel like it's the beginning of a really interesting time and this place picking itself back up, and as a musician, I think it's great to be part of that. And New York is obviously such a hub of music and art and all kinds of things like that I just think that New Zealand's a very community-based place musically, and New York feels the same, but only a lot bigger and a lot more, it's very welcoming, I think it's a lot more friendlier than London, obviously, but it's just exciting to be part of something again, and as brief as my stay has been so far, I've already met a lot of really wonderful people and got this residency on the cards and did this rock lottery thing last weekend, which was
talk about rock lottery. Tourney did it, which is great.
Yeah, it was cool. It was just 25 different Brooklyn musicians put together, like names picked out of a hat, and five different bands made on the spot. We had like 10 hours or 11 hours to write three or four songs to come and perform that night.
Wait, so the
for
band,
charity.
So the band names were picked out like on Friday or Saturday morning?
Just the people, yeah. Like they had five drummers and they're the captains and they each pick four other names.
Right.
And I went along with actually a bit of, a bit invested in the lottery aspect because I was quite a fan of, I'm a fan of Deerhoof, and the drummer from Deerhoof, who I think is amazing, was one of the captains, and I turned up a bit late and Tierney said, "Oh, Liam, you're already here in Greg's band." I was like, yes! And then, yeah, nice to meet you, man. And
yeah.
Just, like, acted all coy.
Play it cool. Like, oh, cool, man. Yeah, I think I've heard a couple of your songs.
Yeah, but no, it was really awesome. And everyone that got picked in the band that we were in called S of So, were just lovely people. And everyone took it really, really seriously. And
what was the musical vibe?
We were pretty heavy, really. We were kind of like punky. We had one slow jam, though, that,
one for the ladies.
One for the ladies, and it was a real sort of get the one you love and grind up against them kind of song.
Classic love story.
We had a really good response, and I think the whole night was a real success. Like I had no idea what it would be like or what the vibe would be, but it was fantastic.
That's awesome. We want to thank you for being on the show.
Cheers.
What are the nuts and bolts Twitter, Facebook website so you can find out?
It's mostly just my name. So the Twitter is just at Liam Finn, I think. Sometimes when I can't get that because there's some other bastard out there called Liam Finn, I just put an S on the end, Liam Finns.
Oh.
But I think Twitter is Liam Finn, Facebook's just Liam Finn as well. You can look at my website, which is liamfinn.tv, and that will take you to the Facebook because I don't have a website.
Fair.
So there you go.
So thank you for joining us.
Cheers. Thanks
for having me. So what are you doing for Thanksgiving?
We're having a big bunch of... Not just New Zealanders, but quite a few New Zealanders.
Chili bacon.
Stuff, we're going to go turkey. To the turkey. I looked into the turducken because I thought that sounded so over the top. It was amazing. Yeah. And through seeing photos of it over and over, like listening to, like looking at barbecue every day, you don't always feel like it. After I looked at about 10 photos of turducken, I decided that it was disgusting.
I feel like I could do a bite.
Yeah,
at someone's
exactly.
house.
Yeah.
But like if that was your effort and like
to invest $100 in a turducken,
it
you're
is
kind
just,
of
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, see what I mean? It's that just doesn't look that good, does it?
You know what? I've never had one and I'll never like unless someone makes one.
Yeah.
I'm never going to go out of my way to get one.
So we've got the turkey. We're going to dry brine it or something, was it?
No. Dry rub or brine.
Dry rub it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Dry Brian.
John Stage is actually is about it. He's like, what did you say? It's like, sorry.
So we are going to be in Philly Wednesday night.
DJ set punches.
Yeah. For all of our Philly podcast listeners.
You never know. Anyway, it's Safari. It's going to be awesome. I'm super excited. And we'll be kicking around. And then we're back next Monday. Super excited. Kelsey Nixon's going to be on the show.
And I'm blanking on the musical guest.
You're really good at your job.
I know. I'm really good at it. Anyway, oh, it's
Puck. So you're the foodie and you're the music.
I'm just more well organized. Okay. He's more of a shit show.
I book some food stuff. Anyway, Liam, thank you so much for being on here.
Cheers.
Take us out. And always, thank you to Grace.
Yeah,
oh, thanks, Grace. Gotta thank the PR people. And, they make so much of this happen. Take us out with one more.
Cool. This song's called Better to Be. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you.
And we're coming back live next week's Snacky Tunes.
Awesome.
Or twice, but the boy inside can't unwind.